This is Alex. I'm from Boston.
Hello, this is Jackie, and I'm from Houston.
Hey, this is Rahul from Stanford.
And we are the Premier Chefs.
Hey guys, the Premier Chels is sponsored by Kickoff Coffee. They are a top quality artisanal roasted coffee. In other words, they're Champions League winner and Premier League winner every single time. They deliver fresh bags directly to your home, so you don't have to go to a coffee shop and pick up something. And the best part about them is every bag gives back to soccer charities. 10% of the proceeds go to organizations that use soccer to promote youth social development in the underserved areas. Use our code TPCoffee15 to get 15% off your order. You can order at kickoffcoffeeco.com or check out the links on our social media. Thanks.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Premier Chels, your source for all things Premier League, but starting with Chelsea first. Coming to you on your speakers and headsets, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm one of your hosts, Jackie, and I'm here with my good friend, Rahul. And maybe you'll be a little more positive today, Rahul. We've got a win under the belt. It's exciting times. How are you doing, my friend?
Why am I seen as the negative guy?
You called me the positive guy on the last episode.
I did.
With the Carefully Louisiana guy. So I think maybe we got to give you the title of negative guy because you...
I prefer realistic.
All right, let's call him the realistic one. And I think I'm alluding to how we're going to open up the podcast today. Rahul, what do you want to share with us today?
Well, you know, I mean, we did win. You're right. We got the win. I don't think anyone saw us keeping a clean sheet. So that was a pleasant surprise. But a win is a win, and we are now, what, 4 wins at home in a row. So something is building, and at this point last season, it was all falling apart. So I have to be positive or realistic, whatever you want to call it.
The realistic one. Yeah, no, listen, I think before we started recording, you were going through some interesting stats, and I know it's been a tough season so far, but you were looking at numbers of where we are this season compared to last season. And I think the news that is that we're almost to the point tally that we had last year, or to the win tally. What can you share with me now?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's both, right? So last season, we ended up with 11 wins, 11 draws, and 16 defeats with 44 points. Right. And this season, we're sitting with 9 wins, 4 draws, and 8 losses with 31 points. So, of course, we're still got about 17 games to go, but if you look at it, you're like, well, 2 more wins and we're equaling last season's win record, and a few more and we'll be surpassing last season's points tally. So from the numbers perspective, it certainly looks like things are better, things are looking up, but we know that's not the numbers are lying here a little bit. But in a season where we've said it multiple times, a young squad, a new squad, new manager, maybe it's not as bleak as it has been looking, but maybe that's also me just coming off the back of a win.
No, listen, I'm happy to switch your name to Mr. Positivity now there, because I was listening to that and I said, okay, he's talking about getting close to the wins, close to the points, but honestly, all I heard was we might survive this season and we're on track to survive this season. I'll take your negativity.
I don't know if I should be that confident, but I can safely say that we will not be going into May hoping we survive.
Yeah, that was some rough waters that we had to navigate last year. But no, listen, I think it is a project, and it's one of those that we talked about with Carefully Louisiana, and maybe it's not a project we can all stomach, but it's got some signs of life maybe, and hopefully we'll talk about it. I know we'll review the game here, and maybe we'll talk about there was no life in the game overall, but let me dive into and do it a little differently, Raul. Let me talk about the starting 11 this time. And we played the traditional 4-2-3-1 that Pochettino seemed to favor this year. And it's Petrovic in goal. I want to talk about him because he's been looking good so far in goal. And maybe if Sanchez come back, what that means for him. A back four of Gusto, De Sassi, Silva, and Colwell. He's persisting with Colwell at left back. We let Matson go on loan, which is an interesting one. Midfield duo of Caicedo and Enzo. 3 behind the striker of Palmer, Gallagher, and Raheem Sterling. And our striker this time was Armando Broya coming back into the mix. So, Rahul, based on fitness and maybe who's available, give me your thoughts on this lineup. I think we called it pretty close.
I think we did. And at this point, I'm not even surprised that Colwell plays at left back, because it would be more surprising when and if he doesn't. Now, I don't know what is going on there. I know we're not don't have a natural left back. We just want to let go, just let one go. But Colwell continues to do the job, and maybe until that center position opens up with events this summer or players moving on, Colwell will continue playing on as left back, which I think hampers us at certain points. Yeah. But I'm not gonna continue beating a dead horse. I think we've spoken enough about that. And I was actually happy to see Cole Palmer return back to a more natural position than playing that false nine, which he did midweek. And no matter what you say, Broya has maybe one goal this season, which was against Fulham. It's just always nice to have a more natural striker, a person that knows a little bit more about that position. And it allows Cole Palmer and some of the other guys behind the striker to express themselves and be a little more free.
Yeah, and it's just playing players in where they feel most comfortable. I know Pochettino likes to have a team of guys that can maybe fill multiple roles. So in Palmer's case, can you play on the right? Can you play in the middle? Can you play down strike? But it's always going to come naturally to Broya, who's been doing this since he was, you know, 9, 10 years old and been trained and coached to be a striker. Same with Palmer, maybe being that attacking threat, being able to play in between the lines, he probably feels a bit more comfortable. And honestly, Rahul, in this game, I was watching early morning kickoff. We looked good with Broya up top. I felt like he was making the runs, finding a way to get his head on the ball. Unfortunately, the ball doesn't go in the net. And if he scores those headers, you look at it and you go, yep, everything's worked. But the team feels like we have a focal point. And I think with the way teams play these days, it's a lot of back and forth passing. Chelsea specifically, we pass the ball around a lot. It's nice to have that little big guy up top to send the ball to, and he's working on his hold-up play and things like that. So it was refreshing to see him overall. I don't know if you got a chance to catch some of the minutes or rewatch some of the game. I've done that as well. We had a lot more energy in the first half compared to Middlesbrough. It was almost like all of us called it. It was a bit of a wake-up call, and we felt like we had something to prove. But I'm not sure if I saw enough good patterns of play. I want to get your feedback before we dive into kind of how we rescued that first half.
That is those are the key words, patterns of play. I don't think we've seen that at all. And maybe I'm clouded at this point by thinking back 4 or 5 months, but I haven't seen us go into a game and just attack a team with certain patterns of play or attacking a team with certain characteristics of our attackers. It's more put it out wide, cut it back in, let Raheem get in the box, drive at the players. It's kind of all like, let's just see what works. And that's one of the criticisms of Pochettino and of the group of people that say Pochettino out is, all right, you've been here 4, 5, 6, 7 months now. And yeah, the numbers, like we were talking at the beginning of the show, look better. But performances aren't better. It's almost like we know we're going to win a couple and then we're due a loss, and then we'll come back and win a couple and we're due a loss. So it's not looking like there's much happening on the training ground. Now, look, I'm not a tactical person. I'm not a coach, but I would like to see a little bit more where we know teams are going to sit in the low block. What are we doing to address that? What are we doing to get in behind? And how do we avoid relying on a penalty and relying on individual brilliance to get us out of these moments? Because we've seen it earlier this season. Nottingham Forest show up, get a breakthrough, get a goal, 1-0. We can't unlock them. And same thing happened against Brentford. So we get the win here and all is good. But we have some tough fixtures coming up down in the next few months. And that's where I'm like, I'd like to see a little bit more. We can lose a game. I'm okay with that. At this point, I almost expect it. But fight for it. Put a performance out. Get me something to say, okay, well, the next time will be better. Because, yeah, we won this game, but I don't know if the next time will be better.
It's one of those, Rahul, when you watch the game and you go, yeah, there's a lot of energy and there's a lot of movement. And we passed the ball nicely. I wouldn't say in the final third, but in the back half of the pitch, we're finding a way to keep the ball. But when you get to that final third, there's a lot of shots, right? We've got 17 shots, but only 3 on target. So they're getting opportunities. But like you said, and summarized, we can get through that low block and we seem to run out of ideas. And I want to highlight one player here for just a second. And that's Willian, Rahul. I think he's approaching 35 or 36 now. We had the pleasure to meet him at preseason this year in the US. And a nice, lovely, humble guy. But he looked more effective or more threatening with Fulham coming forward at the age of 35, 36. And I'm looking at our young guns and I go, yep, they're going to come good. But then I look at Raheem Sterling and I said, maybe you should be doing or filling the mantle of this. And we've talked about this, so I don't want to harp on it for the entire segment. But something needs to change in the way that we find a way. And I know it's on repeat, right? Like, oh, yeah, it takes time or you need to find the right player or what. But at some point, if teams are going to come sit at Stamford Bridge and we can't find a way to unlock them, is it the personnel? Maybe not. You spend 100 millions on different sorts of players. And yes, to your point, Rahul Baroja has only scored one goal this season, but maybe he needs more service. And I want to transition into Enzo for a second because he was so lively in that first half. And I go, where's this Enzo been all season that we've missed and we want to see this excitement coming out of him? But even him, Rahul, I'm missing that final opportunity of getting a shot that actually goes into the net or being a little more effective. And he's doing the work, right? I don't want to come off all doom and gloom, but it's one of those things where it's like, how do we find that secret key to get through these situations? And I don't have to go look and reminisce about maybe we should be bringing William back because he's getting the business done for Fulham on the other end, right? So it's an interesting one. But let's talk about the goal, Rahul. Raheem Sterling has come under a lot of fire from a lot of Chelsea fans, not just us here on the Premier Chelsea. And he wins the penalty in this case. How do you feel about that situation? How do you feel about the penalty? And we'll talk about Cole Palmer in just a second.
It is a penalty. Let's get that out of the way first. It's some smart piece of thinking, cutting back, bringing it back to your foot that you prefer to shoot with. He was going to shoot. I don't think he was going to lay it off. So maybe it was a blessing in disguise that he got tackled and he didn't take that shot because I don't know where that would have ended up. but it starts with Cole Palmer who feeds him the ball. And that's what we were saying is, you know, Raheem's playing on the left, even though he gets the ball towards the right-ish anyway. And that's the freedom and the flexibility you get with not having one of these guys that are not natural strikers play in that position. So it was good play. It was the right call. And as soon as it's called, you know who's going to step up and you know who's going to score it.
It's none other than Cole Palmer. Rahul, he just slots in for the 9th goal of the season, which is honestly very impressive. I know he's got a lot of penalties under the belt. I think he scored 4 or 5 penalties, but we call him Cole Palmer because he doesn't shy away from the responsibility that is required to be a penalty taker. I want to talk about him for just a second here because you said it starts with him. Against Middlesbrough, Rahul, he's played as a false nine, and we seem to have no idea. We seem to be off. We seem to kind of lack that enthusiasm or that final creativity. And the question came about if Cole Palmer is having an off day, is Chelsea having an off day? And I thought, surely not. We're not depending on 21-year-old Cole Palmer that we just brought in this summer from Manchester City. But you look in this Fulham game, and again, we weren't perfect, right? There was a lot of control, a lot of possession, which in some cases was similar to Middlesbrough. But Cole Palmer is on, and Chelsea is on, i.e. we're finding little spaces. We're getting a lot more shots onto the goal, not necessarily on target. Are we relying a little heavily on Cole Palmer this season? Not just from the goals, right? Because we've got the penalty, so I'll take that out. But creativity-wise, we've got Modric, we've got Madueke, we've got Enzo. We'll talk about him later in the segment. Conor Gallagher, Caicedo, strikers. I mean, and everything so far this season, I can't think of much going through without Cole Palmer on the pitch.
It really hasn't. And I think when we first brought him in, he wasn't starting. It wasn't until the Brighton game in Carabao Cup mid-September where he got his first start. And immediately you saw the difference he makes. I think he got the assist in that game. And so it is a reliance on him. It is a reliance on him to unlock defenses, to be that creative player, to score goals, to drive the team forward. And it's all well and good while it's happening, but it's easy to forget that he is a young player. He is a player that is still in his first full Premier League season. I know he's been at Man City for a long time, but he wanted this opportunity. He wanted this playing time. And Man City, from what we've heard, said, sure, you can go out on loan. And he said, no, I want to leave permanently. So that's a man that's confident and believes in his abilities. And I like the way Pochettino is managing him, honestly, because he's kind of just letting him play and letting him do what he needs to do to prove to himself, but also the world, that what he did by leaving the Champions is not easy, Jackie. You can say, I'll sit on the bench here, I'll take my opportunities when I get them, but I'll collect my medals. And he said, you know what? No, I'm going to leave. I'm going to go to 13th place Chelsea and fight there. And from this season, if there's one shining light or shining hope for Chelsea, it is Cole Palmer. And it's weird for me to say that because I wasn't even thinking of this player up until, what was it, deadline day when we signed him. And I was still like, why? So you got to give him credit and you got to give Pochettino credit. And then you also got to give the team around him credit because they for Raheem Sterling, I'm just for an example, to see a 21-year-old step up and take penalties. Those are 9 goals Sterling could potentially have had. Yeah. But I give him credit. I give him he's stuck up his ego and he's let Cole Palmer do that. So all in all, I think everyone's kind of understood the importance of this guy to the team. Now, there will be down moments like the Middlesbrough game where he misses a few chances, but then he bounces back and gets this goal and gets us in the driving seat, at least at the end of the first half.
And, you know, that's the concern I have, and that's the point I was trying to bring up for discussion, because ultimately, Rahul, we win this game 1-0. Second half is more status quo, so just quick recap. We have a few shots on goal. Again, nothing that's super extravagant. In fact, a few opportunities from Fulham where they could come back, and I'm wondering if we can get another goal here, it's going to be more of the repeat that we've seen this season. Chelsea concede a goal, we fall apart, 2-1 to Fulham, game over, but somehow or the other, we hold on. The player that held us together last season, especially the second half of last season, Rahul, was Enzo. We brought him in for $100 million, and he was fantastic for all of those situations. He was finding passes for us. He was giving through balls. He wasn't scoring goals necessarily, but he was the creative outlet. This season, we haven't necessarily seen a lot of that Enzo. In this game in particular, he ends up being man of the match, and he's been fantastic. He's running up and down, finding through passes, taking shots on goal. And the point I'm trying to raise is that when Cole Palmer is down, we need to rely on players like Enzo to be up. And unfortunately, this season, we haven't had 2 or 3 guys up at the same time. And so I'm wondering if this is a building point for Enzo. I know he struggled with a little injury, a little bit of sickness. It's now his second, or at least his first full year with Chelsea going into the second season. We signed him around this time last year. Hopefully he's getting settled in and he's comfortable. Do you think we can now see Enzo kind of pick up and bring the consistency in? Because before we recorded, one of the questions we talked about, we'll talk about transfers a little bit later in the segment, is Enzo really been the standout signing of the new ownership? And I said, no, for $100 million, I haven't seen Enzo do anything. And you said, well, he was man of the match in this game. And I repeat, I said, well, for $100 million, he should be man of the match in every game. And of course, the price tag is not his fault, but he is a quality player and there's a quality player underneath there. So I want to get your thoughts on all of that.
I think you bring up some good points, which is he's not been what we saw even in the second half of last season in a very bad situation where we thought, okay, when we come back in next season, he's going to kick on from there. He's going to be that guy that is that midfield maestro, or is the midfield general that we'll build around. And then we said, we'll bring in Caicedo and those two will be the dream partnership. But it hasn't been the case. And you've got to ask yourself why. Enzo moved, and I'm just going to go back a little bit in time. Enzo moved from Argentina to Benfica in 2022. Stayed till 2023 in January, so essentially 6 months. Within that, he won the World Cup, then gets his big move to Chelsea, then comes to Chelsea and is in a mess of a situation. Graham Potter's fired 2 months later. He has Bruno come in. He has Lampard come in. So there's a lot of changes that have happened. He's had some personal changes in his life with the new baby. He's been injured this season. And now Pochettino has come in and requires something else. And earlier this season, Enzo was playing further forward. That was not working. That got switched around. So it is taking some time. And without knowing the details of what's going on behind the scenes, I do think it's a little unfair to criticize him all the time. Because he's not the one that said, I want to move to Chelsea for £106 million. That was our decision. That was the owner's decision to say that's what we want to spend him. That's what we value him at off of the World Cup. He will come good. He is young. We've seen flashes. We've seen moments where he will provide us to be that midfield person that we believe he is. But it also falls on him a little bit. Now you've had that one game. And it's funny, you mentioned the man of the match. I didn't watch this game. So I saw the Instagram post he put up with the trophy of the man of the match, and I sent it to you, and I was like, is that really his, or did someone give it to him? Because, you know, sometimes players kind of give away their trophies to someone they think they deserves it. And you were like, no, he was good. He had a good game. And so this is his moment to push on from that. And the next game, I'm sure we'll talk about it in a little bit, is Middlesbrough. That is a massive game now. It's semifinal. We need players like Enzo to step up. You've been in at the highest level in the semifinal. I know Carabao Cup was a little bit lower, but it is a massive game, and it's an opportunity for him to drive this team into a final. He may not have to score the goals or provide the assists, but do the work in midfield that provides the platform for the others to do what they need to do to get us the win.
Yeah, very, very well said. And it's not us putting pressure on just Enzo, right? And Enzo, if you're listening, we support you. We think you're going to be the future for us for a long time. But it's
I just bumped him. I have to bring that up. Yeah. So he does listen.
it's one of those situations where we want to create the Chelsea of old, Raul. But the Chelsea of old, we're not trying to repeat what we had, but we do want to replicate some of the spine that we had, which is a fantastic midfielder in the likes of, is it Lampard? Is it Essien? Is it Makalele? And so you've got now Caicedo and Enzo, a fantastic striker. We're still trying to find that, if that's going to be Jackson Broya or somewhere else. A good goalkeeper. We didn't talk too much about Petrovic. How nice has he looked since he's come in? And he's given me comfort, Raul, at least compared to Sanchez. A defensive pairing, you can start picking your peach here. We've got so many good young center backs. We've got a lovely right back in Malagusto. We've got to solve the left back problem long term. And I think one of the nice things we can talk about, at least the silver linings other than the win, Rahul, we've got some injured players coming back now. We got to see Ben Chilwell, not at left back. I'll talk about that in just a second. And we got to see Connie Chukwuemeka coming back. So great to see a couple more options come into the mix, because I think Pochettino may want to look at them and decide what to do with them there, especially if we need a natural left back, as we're alluding to. But before we wrap up this segment, Rahul, I was excited to see Big Ben. He's one of the best left backs on his day in England, and we've known how much we've missed him and his threat going forward. And for a little bit, Cucurella has slotted in there and tried to do what Ben Chilwell could do. Maybe it's not come naturally. Ben Chilwell comes up to the sidelines, and I was super excited. I said, we're winning. He's coming to hell shut shop. He's going to play left back. Maybe Colwell will slide to the middle or come off. That's okay. And of course, Ben Chilwell's put up in left wing with Colwell behind him. And Rahul, I've got to ask you, because it seems to be, we talked a little bit about it, but it seems to be Pochettino's flavor to switch the types of players and the positions that they sit in. What are your thoughts on this? And is it helping the team, or is Poch just being Poch, I guess?
Well, he's clearly seen something to say, I need a center back at left back. And the first game of the season, we saw it, Colwell played against Salah and didn't have the best time, but grew into it. And we said, okay, we see why he's doing it. But now, 4 or 5 months later, it's still happening. And again, injuries have played their part. We don't have a natural left back. When we did, he didn't trust Mattson to play that role. And so it is at this point, I think his preferred player is Colwell for that position, which now will be an interesting situation that Ben Chilwell is back. What does he do? Is it when he need to maybe be a little more defensive, he plays the center back? When we need to push forward and attack games, he plays the left back? I don't know. Or is Ben Chilwell just not fit enough or doesn't have the minutes in him? I don't know. But at some point, maybe towards the end of the season, I would like to see a run of games with a natural left back playing that position, because I think it's just a different dimension to the whole team. Maybe we tweak it so that both fullbacks aren't bombing forward when we're attacking, and maybe that's the reason for that. But I would like to see players playing their natural positions.
You and me both, my friend. I would love to see that. And it's going to be
not Pochettino, so that's what matters.
Well, it's definitely an interesting conversation to have, Rahul. And I want to get your wrapping up thoughts here on Fulham before we move on. Anything other than you saw a little bit of improvement and we need to build on this for the next game?
Yeah, we need to continue building. We've said we've had a good run at home, 4 wins in a row from the start of December. We've won 5 out of 9, which is the second best record in the league after Liverpool. So things are looking better. But even within that run, we've had bad defeats to Manchester United, to Everton, to Wolves. Games that we, at a minimum, maybe should have drawn or even won. And that's where I'm saying it's performances that matter. We need to get more consistent with the way we play and more resilient. We can't just take the first punch and say, okay, we're going to wait and see what happens. And we take the second one, we're knocked out. But that will come with time. So I don't want to be a bratty Chelsea fan, but I do have a question, actually two questions for you. First one, Malo Gusto red card.
Yeah, listen, I saw that live and I was laying down on the couch and I said, not again. It's going to be on loop where this is going to happen, a heavy tackle. And listen, I was going to talk about Gusto here in a second, but yeah, absolutely. I thought that should have been a red card. And that's me as a Chelsea fan saying he's got one before for a similar tackle where he's gone in, you know, gung-ho, full power. He needs to tone that back a little bit because he's been fantastic for us. And I want to see the passion, but with passion, you've got to be a little smart about these decisions you make.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think we got lucky with Anthony Taylor and VAR. Yeah. Just a yellow card. I'll take it. I think we've earned that luck over the last few years with Taylor around. But he does need to, and it has to not just come from him, but also the coaching staff is, you got to be a little more smarter with when you're flying into tackles, because that was a bad tackle. Studs on, and it's a player that is a former Chelsea player. I'm not saying like he shouldn't be doing that to just former Chelsea players in general, but Willian, I mean, it would have been sad to see him go off injured because of that tackle. So yeah, I think Gusto needs to tone it down a little bit, because otherwise everything else is going well for him. And my other question for you, Jackie, is now we've kind of spoken about the numbers. We said we're looking good. We currently sit in ninth, so we are out of 10th, which is great. We are 3 points off of West Ham, who do have a game in hand, who sit in 6th. Is this an opportunity now with 17 games to go to say, let's make that push for the Europa League spot? Let's not, Champions League seems a little too far out. Europa League spot, and if not, Europa Conference League at a minimum.
You know, as we signed players, Rahul, and as the board has renewed players, I read a little bit into the performance-based incentives, i.e. if a player is getting paid, for easy math, $10 a week to play for Chelsea, if they then qualify for Europa League, that becomes $12 a week for Chelsea. And if you qualify for the Champions League, that becomes $15 a week for Chelsea. So my understanding is that the better we finish in the Premier League table, you get a little bit of a bump in your wages, which ultimately, as anybody working in the industry, you want a little bump in your wages. I don't care if you're on 100K a week and now you're 120K a week. I'm sure that extra 20K, whether or not it's much to you and I, it's a lot, but to them, maybe it's not, but it means something. And so I would hope that these guys are self-incentivized, which is what really the ownership wanted to go to with this pricing model. And if it's not really true, I think as a professional, regardless of pay, you want to be playing in those big competitions, right? They've talked about creating a Super League, and a lot of footballers have come out and said, I don't think we need a Super League, because as kids, we grew up watching the Champions League or even the Europa Cup, and we want to be participating in Europe. We come to Chelsea, we come to big clubs to play in Europe. Otherwise, it's fine to go play in your home country, of whether that's Argentina or Brazil, or staying back in Africa and playing in those cups, right? You want to come and put yourself on the biggest stage. And I hate to think of it this way, Rahul, but some of these guys may say, in 3 or 4 years, I'd like to see, like an Eden Hazard, I'd like to go to a Real Madrid, or I'd like to go to a Barcelona and play in those teams. And you best believe those guys are wanting players that have played in Europe and are a little more comfortable doing that. So I know I went on a long tangent here, but yes, we should be pushing for these things. And as a fan, do I expect it? No, because I've been hurt so much in the last couple of years here that I'm happy to just see us making little baby steps. But on paper, absolutely, we should be going for these 3-4 points and trying to make up the difference.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair expectation of this squad at this point, to say, all right, we've been okay the first half of the season, but we are within touching distance, like you said, and there is something to play for here. It's not kind of like last season where we just kind of waited till May to say, let's just get that win and be home and dry. And you look at the teams in and around us. I mean, Newcastle from last season sitting in 10th. Now, they are having an off season in comparison to last season, but they are sitting below us. So is that an improvement for Chelsea? Brighton are right above us with the game in hand. United are right above us with the same equal games played, but a point more. West Ham, like I said, sitting in 6th. And, I mean, for those Chelsea fans that are really positive and have seen things that maybe you and I have missed, we're only 9 points off of Tottenham and Arsenal, who sit joint for 4th at 40 points. So, look, a lot of football to be played, a lot of games to be coming in the next few months and towards the end of the season. Things can happen, but I'd rather not put our hopes way too high to get disappointed and say, well, we were 9 points and we didn't make it. Let's just focus on taking those baby steps, like you said, and getting those incentives like the players have built into their contracts.
Yeah, that'll be a nice one. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about Malagusto and Chilwell, but I think in the interest of time, we'll put a pin in it and bring it back in the next episode. So if you're interested in this question, tune in the next episode. Raul, let's move on and talk about transfers. But before transfers, I made a couple of jokes at the beginning of this segment calling you the negative one. And I was building up to maybe a pun or a play on the word one, the special one. And I know we wanted to talk a few minutes about our old leader. He's been with us a couple of times and taken us to a couple of trophies, more than a couple, I should say. Jose Mourinho has been removed from his position as head coach of Roma, which is unfortunate because I thought, given the budget and where they've been for many years, he really had propelled them to win a European Cup. And I know it's a difficult time to kind of climb the Serie A ladder, but I think Jose could have done it and maybe would have had a better chance to win another trophy here or there. But it is what it is. He's moved on. I wanted to get your thoughts on Jose being a free agent now.
Honestly, a surprising one, because I know his contract was up at the end of the season. So well, we got 4 months more for that. And I have been keeping up Roma a little bit because of Jose Mourinho, especially after the Obi-Wan podcast he did. And I mean, they beat Napoli around Christmas time. Things were looking okay. Lukaku, I watched him play and I was like, thank God you're not in the blue shirt. But it wasn't, I mean, look, I don't have the benefit of the whole season or even the last few seasons. But like you said, he's taking them to two European finals. He's won a trophy, something that they hadn't done in a very long time. And they've given him a decent squad. You look at it, Lukaku, Tammy Abraham, I forget the goalie's name, but he also came from the Premier League. And there are players in there that are good enough. Of course, Jose being Jose has always complained that they can't compete with the likes of Juventus and Milan and Inter Milan. But that's where I think Jose Mourinho makes a difference, is he gets an extra 10-15% out of the players that he has. But Roma, I feel, just didn't think it was going the right way. They felt that they could even make it back into the Champions League this season, which was not going to happen. I believe they sit in ninth. So it's an unfortunate ending for him. But from what I heard, this is now his fifth sacking, and he's made close to, or if not more than, 80 million in just getting sacked. So I'm sure it hurts. I'm sure he's disappointed, but his bank account's looking good.
Yeah, I mean, other than his bank account, Rahul, I think he's one of those guys that just likes to win. And I think looking at the table, I'm a little surprised by this situation, right? Because they're sitting in ninth, which it doesn't sound great, but the Italian league has notoriously been very close, where these teams kind of are 1-2 points off of each other. And if I'm doing my math correctly, he was 5, if not 6 points away from a fourth place finish. And ultimately, I get it. It's very competitive. It doesn't mean he's going to make up the 6 points and get to top four, but maybe a fifth, maybe a sixth, and he would climb them up the table like he's done in the past, especially towards the second half of the season, maybe with another transfer window in there. Maybe Roma would spend a couple bucks or a loan here or there, and things could kick off. So I'm definitely surprised. And I think it's one of those where Jose sometimes, he has a little bit of a chip on his shoulder or a little bit of an attitude that gets the better of him. And maybe he's parted ways because he and ownership have not found a good way to see eye to eye. It happens, but I wish him the best. He's given us a lot of memories. And till today, even though he's not with Chelsea, we like to keep an eye on Jose because he's always got a funny word or two to share, especially I listened to him on the Obi Mikel podcast recently, where he just goes, yeah, Arsenal don't have a chance of finishing in the Premier League. It's going to be between Liverpool and City. So always a funny gentleman there to talk about.
Back to the Premier League, Jackie, for Jose.
You mentioned, Rahul, a certain Newcastle having a little blip. And I wonder if this is the right, quote-unquote, project for Jose. A lot of funding, if they can get their FFP stuff down under control. It's a project that he picked up with Chelsea in 04, where he brought a relatively good team with a very, very rich owner to back him on the types of players he wanted. And he brought success very, very quickly to Chelsea Football Club. But listen, there was a lot of groundwork done before that with Ranieri and Roman beforehand. But it doesn't mean there's not been a lot of groundwork done for Newcastle in the last couple of years. So it's definitely going to be an interesting one to watch. I respect Eddie Howe and what he's done so far. So I don't know if they want to part ways with him just yet. But listen, Jose Mourinho is on the market. A lot of things can happen. So we'll keep an eye on this one for sure.
He does have Rahul, a home very close to Chelsea, so not starting any rumors, but yes, Jose Mourinho is back in the market.
It causes a lot of stress for all of us out here with the seasons that Chelsea have had recently. Rahul, I want to talk about transfers. We alluded to the fact that Matson has moved on a loan. Fofana's come back into the mix, and we have another striker. I'm not sure if he goes out on loan. Andre Santos was recalled from loan. He's gone out to play for Brazil right now. He may come back and go on another loan. I'm not sure what it is. Have you heard of any incomings for Chelsea? I know we speculated we need a striker. We talked about, you know, looking at Victor Osimhen. I don't know if he's the right mix for 100 plus million. There's a rumor Karim Benzema is disgruntled in Saudi Arabia. I'm not sure if that's true. Anything you've heard? And if not, what's your thoughts on the Karim Benzema situation? Maybe a 6 month cheeky loan and he can help put a couple of goals in the net?
I have been burnt way too much in a January window by a big striker name, Alexandre Pato, Higuain. So as much as I would be in favor of seeing Benzema in a Chelsea shirt, I just don't know what that would look like and how that would go. And would he even care for a 6 month loan? And are we covering the wages? Because those wages are high coming out of Saudi Arabia. So I don't know. On paper, it sounds good. It sounds like a FIFA transfer to me, honestly. But the fact that we're sitting here on the 16th of January and we've signed no one tells me that the club are a little more conscious of who they want to bring in and what they want to do with the squad. Maybe not even now, but going into the summer. So we'll see with these rumors around Benzema. But there is a Sporting striker, Victor, and I'm not even going to try to mention the last name, but he is a young striker. He's come up as a name over the last few weeks. But as it stands, there is no interest. According to some journalists, according to others, there's been made an offer. So I don't know where the truth lies here, but that's another name that has come up. And the release clause is 100 million euros. So, and you never know. I mean, agents and players may be trying to make a story out of using Chelsea's name. So, that's another name, but apart from that, I know Robert Firmino is another one that's come up. I don't know if that's a good fit, to be honest. Henderson was one that came up over the last few weeks as someone that also wants to leave Saudi Arabia, but I don't know if that's another one that we need to be going into. So I like the way the club's operating, which is just stay calm and do your business quietly if there is any business happening behind the scenes. And if someone comes in, they come in. If not, Jackson will be back and we'll just see out the season with the players we got.
And I do want to fact check you for just a second, because I've been trying to make sure we're doing the right things here in the podcast. We did have one signing in January, and I believe I'm going to try and say his name correctly. It's Pape Dadua Diong, which we talked about a little bit earlier, Rahul. It's a young Senegalese midfielder. He's 17 years old, and he's got a pre-contract with Chelsea to join us in the summer when he turns 18. So what is it with our board of signing extremely young players or players that are 100 million plus? I think that's our range. We don't kind of go in between a very young future prospect or a 100 million pound signing. So I'm not sure what our board is thinking. The 100 million pound players daycare, the young players, right? Is that what it is? And unfortunately, the 100 million pound players are all 21 and 22 themselves. Yeah. So. this will definitely be an interesting one.
Evan Ferguson, Jackie's another one that's come up, a Brighton player that honestly I can't put myself, let alone see the club do another piece of business with Brighton. But hey, if that's what they want to do.
Listen, I think Brighton has found a way to pull our pants down for the last 24 months. And so I don't know if the owners are just happy having their pants pulled down, but I, for one, listen, if he's a good player, that's fine. But I think we know how difficult it has been to negotiate with Brighton. Rahul, you know, Graham Potter, 20-odd million. Cucurella, 60-odd million. We've now got a midfielder in Caicedo, 100-odd million. I don't want to go negotiate with Brighton and basically fund their whole new wave of transfers for the next few years. So maybe stay away from them for a couple of seasons. But transfer market overall, Rahul, I've not seen anything too exciting going on in and around the Premier League. I'm sure there'll be some last-minute signings towards the end of the transfer window. But we'll wait and see how that plays out.
Do you think that's down to, I mean, we've seen Everton get docked points. We know Man City are being investigated. This week we found out Nottingham Forest are under review as well. Chelsea are under review. You think clubs have just cooled off a little bit with their spending based on the fact that they know the Premier League is coming down on teams that violate the rules.
Yeah, I'm sure that has a part to play with it. I can only speak from maybe the perspective of a couple of the big clubs around us, Raul, and that's maybe us, Manchester United, Real Madrid. All of these clubs are looking for an elite striker. There are not so many of those on the market either, right? So I know you mentioned the guy, I forget if it was from Sporting or from where. I don't know if I want to go spend $100 million on him as a project striker, and that's full respect to him. He might actually turn out to be fantastic. But Man United went and spent $60 or $70 million on Rasmus Højlund, and he scored a couple goals, Rahul, but he's not the finished product yet. So I think all of these clubs that are in the market, obviously the ones that I'm aware of, are looking for finished products. And maybe that's just how the market is. It's a very expensive, overinflated. They haven't got the right profile yet. So who knows? Maybe Chelsea's transfer strategy of signing all the kids that will become prospects in the future may work. I don't know. Well, it remains to be seen for now. All right, I think we've talked a lot about transfers now. Let's move on and build up to Middlesbrough. Yeah, you've alluded to it a couple of times. You said that it's an opportunity to make to final. Players like Enzo maybe want to step up. What can you share with me about Middlesbrough and Chelsea?
It's honestly the second leg, so we've lost 1-0. We're bringing them back to the bridge. We just need to go for it. I don't want to see us say, oh, well, it's 1-0. Let's kind of stay tight and try to get the first goal. Let's just go for it. Let's just take them by surprise, get the atmosphere right, and kill this game, honestly, in the first 45 minutes. I know it's a semifinal. I don't mean to disrespect Middlesbrough, but we owe it to ourselves and the players owe it to the fans to say what we did away from home for 90 minutes wasn't good. So in these 45 minutes in the beginning, we're going to score a couple of goals, kill this game, and come back and have Middlesbrough come at us and exploit the spaces and really just put this tie to bed and go to Wembley. That's ideally what I'd like to see. Will it happen? I don't know. We'll probably end up in a penalty shootout. and from there, we know what happens.
Rahul, in the last game, we were extremely poor. I would say it's one of the worst performances I've seen from Chelsea this season. And that's giving a lot of credit to Middlesbrough. I thought they were lively. I thought they were energetic. And they've had their share of injuries. And they had two injuries during the game as well, which threw their game plan out the window. It didn't matter. They just showed more passion. They showed more heart. They were at home. They wanted to put a game on for their fans. Pochettino comes out afterwards and I don't know if it's for the media or it's truly how he feels, but it was almost like he wasn't too upset. He said it's one half of the game that has been played so far, which is true. It's a 180-minute tie, right? There are two games that need to happen. I felt as though he should have been a little more irritated with his team, given that they were not able to perform. And I say this not knowing what he does behind closed doors. Maybe he's one of those managers that tears into them behind closed doors, but put United front when he comes to media and in front of all the fans. And so I'm interested to see how that plays out. But I can't expect us to play even as half as bad as we did in that first half, where in front of our fans, like you said. What do you think Pochettino can do to rally these guys if he has to do anything?
I mean, I seriously hope that he didn't just say it's the first half and we'll come back in the second half to them in the locker room, because that performance was atrocious. Yeah. Maybe we could have scored. Maybe we should have scored, but we didn't. And we didn't put up a fight, like you said. So there should have been, and I really hope there were some stern words said. And honestly, he just needs to get them to believe that they can make it to the final, get them to believe that they are the better team. Because we are. I mean, I'm not disrespecting Middlesbrough, and I know where we've been over the last 18 months or so as Chelsea, but we should not be coming into this game with any less kind of feelings around can we make the final? Should we be doubting ourselves? We're Chelsea. You play for one of the best clubs in the world. You are one of the best players in the world or potential to be. Go out and do the business, stick to the basics, put the ball in the back of the net and get the job done. That's as they say, or they used to say when I used to live in Patriots Nation, just do your job.
It's really that simple, right? Sometimes you just got to go out there and do your job. And well, anybody can do a job, right? But on paper, £100 million squad or £1 billion squad, I should say, given all of the teammates versus a £60 million squad, they should be able to do their job a lot better than Middlesbrough can. And that's credit to Middlesbrough, like I've said, but It's going to be an interesting lineup, Rahul. What do you think he's going to go with? We've seen a lot of changes every game. It's not been one that he kind of standardizes. He mixes and matches. We've seen Mudrik come in and out. We've seen Enzo play in a 10. We've sometimes seen him play a little deeper. Who do you think he's going to go with for the starting 11? Goalkeeper Petrovic, right?
I think so, yeah. But yeah, Petrovic in goal. Gusto right back. Di Sassi, Thiago Silva, Colwell. I think, honestly, it's going to be similar to what we saw against Fulham. So Caicedo, Enzo, Conor Gallagher plays, which would mean Palmer plays on the right. Maybe Mudrik or Sterling. And then up top would be Broya. And that is a team good enough to get the job done for me on paper. And if not, you still have either Mudrik or Sterling on the bench. You have the option of bringing Washington, who's a young striker, off the bench. So I can't stress this any more than I have already. This should be a game that we shouldn't even need to be requiring subs to come on and win it for us. We should get the job done with the first 11.
I will be surprised if we don't make some subs to shake up this game, because I think Middlesbrough are going to be up for it. I think they're going to come in with that low block that has really kind of stumped us this season, Rahul. But a couple of names I wanted to throw into the mix. Madueke, he's been good. Yes, a few times we've seen him since we've come back. Chukwuemeka is back from injury as well. We saw him for a few minutes in the previous game, so maybe he can help unlock a low block. He's another tricky player. Ben Chilwell, Rahul, you didn't pick him to start, but I'm sure he's not fully fit. Maybe he comes on in the left wing position and helps get a goal here or there. I want to talk for just a second about Mudrik versus Raheem Sterling. I know you mentioned it might be the same starting 11. In this game where you see a team sit so deep, is there almost value for a player like Mudrik to kind of take Sterling's place? Not saying Sterling can't do it, but maybe Mudrik is up for the battle. And if he's not, Sterling is then galvanized by saying, why did I go on the bench for a semifinal and comes on in that second half?
You know what? I think I see what you're saying, but if a team's sitting deep, Mudrik really thrives off of the space.
Mm.
And not to say that he can't dribble, but from the few times we've seen Sterling have fantastic games this season, it's when he's been driving at players, getting players to get out of position, be maybe 2-on-1, which opens up space for someone else. That's honestly what I think would be beneficial, at least in the first half or first 45 or whatever it is, depending on how the game goes. So I would go with Sterling. And then there's the option of always bringing Mudrik on when maybe the team is a little bit more tired on the other side. And then you bring on that pace and you never know what happens. So I would, as much as I hate to say it, I would start with Sterling. But Madueke is another great option that you've mentioned that could maybe start and Cole Palmer plays on the other side. But I'd like to see Cole Palmer off the right. Now we could see maybe Sterling, Palmer and Madueke, which would be great. But then we're losing maybe a Connor. So yeah, the options are there. And Nkunku might be back. Who knows? I know there's a little bit of a break between the Fulham game and the Middlesbrough game. So the more options we have, the better. But at the end of the day, we need to play players in their best position and let them do the job.
And get the job done, like you said. So in that spirit, Rahul, they're getting the job done. They want to go to the final. What's your scoreline prediction, my friend?
3-0.
Wow, you're going full aggressive today. You're not the negative one. You're the positive one, the excited one. What do I call you, my friend?
Just the optimistic. I'm deluded. I don't know. I've said it already. It's 90 minutes here that we have to turn around from the last game. We have the opportunity. It's not a one-legged tie. So we have the opportunity. It's at home. What more can these players and this coaching staff want to get to the final? Now, the final is a whole different story, and we have to get there first. But if we don't make it to the final, it's... maybe we will have to wait till May to be secure in the Premier League as well.
Rahul, do you know what the rules are if we tie the game? Does it go into extra time? Does away goals count? Do you know what the rules are that are going on?
Away goals are a thing, but let me get your prediction. And in the meantime, I'll confirm that. And if you want to provide maybe a justification for your prediction as well.
Yeah, listen, as we've been playing this season, I feel like we've been shaky. We can get the goals sometimes. We don't always score them because we've seen that we've got a lot of chances but not burying the goals. So I think we'll get two goals. So I think we can get two goals in this game. but I'm worried we can't keep a clean sheet either. And so I'm curious, if we get 2-1, are we going to extra time, or is this away goals rule? So I'm going to go for 2-1 with the assumption that there's no away goals rule. This goes into extra time and we'll get that third goal in extra time.
So here's the official rule. Should the scores on aggregate be level at 90 minutes of the second leg, the game will go to extra time for a further 30 minutes.
Yeah, so I'm going to go for 2-1 in normal time, make it a feisty fixture for us, and we get that third goal in extra time. And maybe you and I will have a heart attack, I don't know, following Chelsea in the last few months
here. Here I was hoping that you'd be like, no, we'll get it done, 2-0, beat them 2-1 on aggregate. Listen, I don't care how it happens. Ideally, it should be a convincing performance. If we can beat a championship team at home, like we did just beat Preston, I know we struggled in the first half, but we ultimately got the job done. We just have to get it done, get it to the final, and then we take it from there. But not making the final, especially with the way the draw has gone, we got the weaker of the four teams left. Just show up, get the business done, and let's go to Wembley. And by the way, we have a game 3 days right after this game. So we can't afford extra time, but if that's what it takes, that's what it takes.
Yeah, listen, just to repeat myself, I think it's one of those, Rahul, where we should be going to the final and really pushing to get that cup. It's about Pochettino getting that chip off his shoulder of not having a cup in England. It's about us just getting a young team to have a trophy in their hands, which just builds the confidence for everything. But listen, my friend, if we get 3-1 on extra time, I'm okay with it. I know we don't want to go there, but I'll take the win whichever way it comes, just like you said. But why don't you take us home?
Yeah, we will be watching and praying between now and then, but at least we've got a week to do that. So that wraps it up, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Please continue to subscribe, like, and follow us. It's at the Premier Chels on all podcast providers and at the Premier Chels Pod on Instagram and Twitter. And we will be back with a Middlesbrough review and an Aston Villa FA Cup preview. But until then, stay safe and up the Chels. The Premier Chels has partnered with Fubo TV. Fubo TV is your home for live sports and TV without a cable in the US and Canada. You can watch on all your devices, which means you don't have to miss any of the actions or goals that Chelsea score in the Premier League and Champions League.
You heard that right. Fubo TV networks broadcast Premier League, Champions League, and many other leagues and tournaments. So what are you waiting for? Start your free trial today at fubotv.com/TPC.